Welcome to Chumba Casino, America's number one online social casino. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Explore hundreds of social games, including top-tier slots, jackpot games, and table classics with new games launching regularly. At home, on your lunch break, or relaxing on the couch, world-class entertainment is just a tap away. Score free daily login bonuses and kick things off with a free welcome bonus. Sign up today and discover why over 1 million players choose Chumba Casino to play for nonstop fun. Your next fun moment starts now at Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, hey, Carton Show, Damian Woody in for Big Mac today. You know, I totally forgot that Don Cronson was coming into the studio today. That's on me. That's why I shouldn't be booking guests. So Don was a long time, some people say one of the great agents of all time. Represented Anthony Mason, represented Jamal Mashburn, Mark Jackson, Michael Ray Richardson. I'm going to have you right over here, sir. Ed Too Tall Jones, and on and on and on. And he's called into the show a number of times. And I thought it'd be great to let him share some stories with the audience on a random, you know, summer afternoon. Don, that's Damian Woody right over there.
How you doing, sir?
And it's a pleasure to meet you.
Damian.
Pleasure.
Look at that.
Absolutely.
That's right. You have a man handshake, by the way.
Yes, he does.
I try.
You do? No, you do. You shake hands like a grown-up.
Well, I'm 83 years old.
And God bless you.
I'm still able to do a couple of things.
Yeah.
Not that many, but I'm still here and I'm still punching.
You got your health, you got everything, right?
Knock on wood, as they
83
say.
83 years old. You don't look a day over 82, by the way.
I mean, hey, listen, every woman I talk to is by definition an underage lady.
Yeah, stop talking to them.
Exactly
right. Who is your favorite client to represent? Without you know, getting in trouble for saying it. Did you have one or two, though?
I love, well, the two guys that made my career early on were Ed Too Tall Jones
the famous
and
Dallas
Leonard
Cowboy.
Truck Robinson.
Really? The famous
I
Nick.
Had a, my career, I always wanted to get into sports.
And you went to Syracuse,
I
correct?
Went to Syracuse, okay. And then I graduated. I went to Harvard Law School,
okay.
And I graduated, and I went to UCLA Graduate School.
You're a professional student.
I had more deferments than Dick Cheney.
I
broke an NCAA record. I had 9 consecutive student deferments.
Got it.
The war was going on. I wouldn't have run away, but...
Go to Canada, you decide to stay in school to avoid going to Vietnam.
So there I am in UCLA, and I see where the Detroit Pistons, with Dave Bing, my dear friend and fraternity brother, are playing the San Diego Rockets.
Okay.
I said, hell, it's an hour and a half away. I drove down to see Dave, met him at the hotel, went to the game. That night I met a guy named Max Shapiro, who at the time was the head scout for the Rockets. Later, Max, thinking outside the box, later became an A. When I say later, this is the late 60s, early 70s, when the field of athlete representation was just birthing.
Okay.
Prior there, too, the money wasn't there. You didn't need advisors. What you needed was a good job in the offseason to pay your rent.
Sure.
But with the TV money now, agents and I wanted to get into the business. I kept knocking on doors. I talked to Larry Fleischer, who was the head of the NBA. At the time, his Players Association work was just, it was a hobby. He was the head counsel for Restaurant Associates. That was his job.
Got it.
But Max became an agent, sets up a camp where he brings, as they called them, rising seniors. These are young men who were about to be seniors, after the given summer.
Okay.
And they'd come out and he'd try to sign them. And I met Max. You know, I went to the game and then went back to UCLA. But Max and I kept in touch. He would come east to scout, etc. And one day in 71, he called me and says, Donnie, I need an attorney in my business. And all of a sudden, I'm in the business. Because I went to see David play.
That's the way your life works.
Yeah.
So if you're not friends with Dave Bing, you're never at that game, you never meet
Who
the other
knows?
Guy. You're just a well-known, successful litigator out of Harvard.
Right.
I know Damian had a quick question. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to know, what was your breakthrough moment? What was, Craig read off the... all the different players that you've represented, but what was that breakthrough moment for you as an agent?
I would say that it would have something to do with Too Tall because he was the most well-known of the guys that I represented. He was nationally known.
Right.
And
did he come to you? Did you pitch him?
Here's the way it happened. The guy who became an agent, Max Shapiro, heavily scouted the what we call now the historically black colleges and universities.
The HBCUs, right.
The South at the time, we're talking late 60s, early 70s, athletically was lily white, totally segregated. And Max realized that there are all these great Southern high school players. They can't go to the SEC. Or they're going to Tennessee State, Grambling, Prairie View, etc. Max develops this great relationship with various coaches, especially Ed Martin, head basketball coach at Tennessee State and later Vanderbilt. And one day, and I get to know Ed real well because now I'm working for and with Max. One day in the spring of 73.
So can I stop you and just ask a question just so my mind's working? So it took a white Jewish man to go into the Deep South with an idea that there are these great athletes that aren't getting a chance to play at schools that white athletes are playing at to give these black athletes an opportunity to advance with their skills.
That is correct. Other scouts went, but a lot of them weren't all that excited about going, apparently, I was still going on to these black campuses.
Yeah.
I mean, I did the whole circuit. That's what I did. I was, pressing the flesh, as they say. And I get a call in May of 73 from Ed Martin, the head coach. Donnie, you got to come down here. There's this kid on the football team the scouts really like. His name is Ed Too Tall Jones. So Ed had played freshman basketball and then went out for the football team. And the first day...
What's up? I'm Draymond Green, and when I'm not hosting the Draymond Green Show, I'm usually working out in the gym and on the court. Anybody can have one good day in the gym, but the key is recovery. That's why athletes are taking Omega XL Sport. Omega XL Sport is a premium recovery supplement powered by green-lipped muscle oil extract with three key clean ingredients and backed by over four decades of research. It's NSF certified for sport, which is such an amazing distinction. It's free of 290 banned substances trusted by athletes and recognized by major sports organizations. My body has taken a beating over the years, and recovery becomes more important the longer you stay active. That's why Omega XL Sport caught my attention. Omega XL Sport helps support your body's natural recovery process, helping reduce post-workout muscle soreness, inflammation, and supports mobility so you can stay consistent when it matters most. Less time feeling beat up, more time doing what you love. Omega XL Sport. Extra strength recovery now available at GNC and GNC.com.
Hey everyone, it's Scott Hansen. For years, I've helped you survive Sunday. Well, this year, it means something different. $25 million in guaranteed prizes on Splash Sports. We have survivor contests that begin at $5. You make your pick every week, can't choose the same team twice, win and you survive, miss and you're out. Survive Sundays. Download the Splash Sports app now.
Terms and conditions apply. Must be 18 plus to play, depending on jurisdiction. Please play responsibly. For help, dial 1-800-MY-RESET.
Of practice, he comes out. You know, you have the football pants that, they come down to the knee and you have the padding. Ed's pants came down more or less to the middle of his thigh. And he's walking around, and one of his guys, man, you're just too tall to play football.
Come on, that's how you acted him?
That's it. No, that's the story. I know that for sure.
Okay, I hear you.
And so now I go down, and I meet with this. At the time, Ed was this, when I say, big old country kid. He looked.
Right.
He listened, heard everything. He didn't say too many things other than hello, going, thank you.
Sure.
And I did my hour long thing, right? Whatever it was. I did not get Ed as a client until 3 years later. But Ed, that season, meaning the season of 1973, his senior year, played on a national championship black college team. They had five guys drafted on the first two rounds, which is basically unheard of for a little old school. Ed was the overall number one. to the Dallas Cowboys. Waymon Bryant, the middle linebacker, was the overall number four to the Chicago Bears. They had 3 second-rounders, and I got one of them, a wide receiver named John Holland.
Okay.
And that got me...
That got you started as what Damien was asking.
Exactly. A story with Tutor that I think you find very interesting. Ed went into boxing.
I remember it well. I was a big boxing fan, and he looked so out of place in the ring, and he got dropped. I know in one of those fights, I forget the kid that dropped him, but he got dropped pretty quick.
He did. It was the first. Here's what happened. The Dallas Cowboys crushed the Denver Broncos, the Orange Crushers, they called them, in the 1979 Super Bowl. I was there in New Orleans, and now I'm with Ed and all his teammates in the hotel, the party after the game. I said, Ed, you know, you're going into your option year, and the Cowboys don't let their big guys, big stars, go into their option year. They renegotiate.
Right.
And I'll be coming down to Dallas, obviously, to take care of this. He says, Don, I got to tell you something. And when Ed spoke, you listen, not only because he was my most important client, but he was smart. And when he spoke, he had something real to say. He says, Don, I want to go into boxing. Whoa. And I want you to set it all up. We talked, and I said, one thing, Ed, we should not lie to the Cowboys. If we tell them now, of course, you have this next year that you must play this year. You can't leave. But if we tell them now and it becomes public that you are going into boxing after this season, it's going to be an unbelievable circus the whole year.
Right. And this is the conservative Dallas Cowboys, the Tom Landry Dallas Cowboys.
Landry's the coach.
The post, Roger
Gil Brandt is head of personnel.
This ain't the Jerry Jones Dallas Cowboys. Right. I got
exactly.
You.
Exactly. And I understand, and he certainly understood. So I had to some way get the Cowboys off my back without lying to them.
Okay.
So I meet with Tex, Schramm, and Gil, and I say that I can't tell you why, but too tall. Oh, no. We don't want to negotiate the option year situation. Why? Because Ed feels he's going to have an all-pro year. And we can come in next year with leverage.
Money.
Back in the day, you didn't have leverage. You were coming back to that team, and any year you gave up the big signing bonus, meaning the new contract, was literally money flushed down the toilet.
Sure.
And I knew the Cowboys would think, oh, Cronson, he doesn't know anything.
So I want to fast forward the story a little bit. When it's announced that Too Tall Jones is going to box, I imagine at some point your office phone rings and it's Tex Schramm or someone from the Cowboys
before
saying
the draft,
something, right?
I told them that Ed will not be back this coming year. You know, he had played out his option.
Right.
And I said, I can't tell you yet, but please believe me, he's not coming back this year.
Okay.
And when after the year that he did fight and he decided to go back to football, I could go to them and I had never lied to them.
Got it. So
and
they
that
respected
made a big
you.
Difference, I felt.
What was it like for you watching your guy get dropped in the ring? Because you had to be against him
I'll
fighting.
I'll tell you what I told people. Let me give you the context first. I was literally in the corner with a robe on. Now, Ed told me to set the whole thing up, meaning get a manager and get a trainer.
Right.
And I went out there, and I did. I found a guy named Murphy Griffith, who was one of these real dedicated boxing guys, African-American, knew everything. And another guy who had literally gotten into boxing recently, who became the manager, his name was David Wolf. Now, you might remember the name from the book about Connie Hawkins called Foul. David Wolf wrote that book.
Got it. Okay.
Then he got into boxing, and His client at the time, before he got Ed, was Ray Boom Boom Mancini.
I used to love watching him Saturday.
A really fine
young
man.
And obviously Ray Boom Boom Mancini finds Dooku Kim.
Yeah, and he
unfortunately passes away after the fight. That's why I went from 15 rounds down to 12 rounds. But my dad and I would sit there every Saturday because I grew up in a boxing family. My grandfather won the Golden Gloves in New York twice. So if Boom Boom Mancini was fighting, we were in front of that TV watching it. He was a great fighter. And by the way,
terrific young man.
That fight in which he unfortunately took Kim's life really ended his career also.
I remember. Sure.
Let me fast forward to some other clients here real quick. You represented Pearl Washington.
Correct.
Dwayne
and
Washington,
I have the Pearl Washington t-shirt.
May
on,
he rest
right?
in peace. Obviously, he had a brain tumor, brain hemorrhage.
He had brain cancer. And he died at age. Two of my closest guys, Anthony Mason, had a massive heart attack and died at 48.
Right.
And Pearl died at 52.
So, as a Syracuse guy, like Pearl Washington was one of the greatest basketball players any of us had ever seen. He really put Syracuse basketball in a lot of ways on the map generationally.
Jimmy Boeheim, who got to school in 62 when I was there, and who was a very good friend of mine, has always said, the two guys that put the Big East on the map were Patrick Ewing and Pearl Washington.
Now, Pearl did things I had never seen before.
Yeah.
And I obviously went to Syracuse years later and got to see Sherman Douglas and Billy Owens and Derek Coleman and really great players. I never met or got to know Pearl Washington. Great guy.
I always said this about Pearl. When Pearl came to Syracuse, he was literally a living legend in New York City.
Yes, yes.
As a high school bat. He was incandescent.
He was Kenny Anderson and
he
Steph.
Was everybody.
And Skip to my Lou. Right. He was.
And he became, obviously, a all-time great star at Syracuse.
Yes.
From the day I met him, and this is right after his junior year, he's down in Dallas, which is where the Final Four is going to be, and I went down to meet him. I was introduced to him by Bernie Fine, the then assistant, and he was always a gentleman. That
Good man.
Is my original, and to this day, I'm very friendly to this day with his then fiance Deborah Busacco. Lovely lady. He was average, plus or minus average in the pros. You know, he was not nearly. Couple of things about him. Louis Chaffel, former general manager and then owner of the Miami Heat, said to me once when he was the boss of the New Jersey Nets where Pearl was playing, he said, Donald, Pearl's the only guy from Brooklyn I ever knew who was not a gym rat. He was so good,
really?
As you said, at what he did. He could get to the hole.
He didn't
have to develop a jump shot. He didn't have to develop some of the things, the skill set, which...
So you're saying he could have been even better and probably a better pro had he put the time in that a lot of his peers put in.
He had a weight problem to some degree. He also, in his defense, he played for two coaches, Dave Wall and Ronnie Rothstein, who were both set-piece coaches. With Pearl, you don't set-piece all the time. You give him the ball and let him be Pearl.
Let him do his thing, right.
And whatever.
Let me ask you this question. I think you teased last time you called in that you were unwittingly responsible for Bob Costas getting his first play-by-play gig with the ABA, the St. Louis team in the ABA.
It wasn't me. Here's the situation.
Go ahead. And I was with Bob a couple of weeks ago, and I forgot to ask him about it. So next time I see him, I want to know the story.
My fraternity brother, Donnie Shupak, classmate. Donnie represented the Silna brothers, S-I-L-N-A, Ozzie and Dan. They bought the Charlotte ABA franchise in 1968 and moved it to St. Louis, where it did become, as you mentioned, the Spirit of St. Louis.
Right.
Donnie, hands-on, very into everything, smart, became an attorney. He's out in St. Louis putting everything together. And one of his people comes and says, Donnie, we need an announcer for our games on KMOX. And Donnie says, put together 50 tapes, bring them, narrow it down to 5 or 6 and bring them to me.
Okay.
Which they do. And Donnie said, did any of these kids go to Syracuse? I said, yeah, this kid, Bob Costas, give him the job. I know that this is true, but A, I read it. B, Donnie told me. C, Costas, face-to-face, I'm right next to him at a function that Boeheim was being honored, and he totally confirmed it. And recently, within the last 2 months, I was at a Hudson County Basketball Legends lunch.
Okay.
And there's Dan's Ozzie Sillner, one of the two brothers. And we're sitting talking.
Yeah.
That's the way it happened. Another thing that Donnie did that's incredibly significant that very few people know is what they call the in perpetuity contract. And what happened was when the ABA and the NBA merged in 68, I believe it was, 76, 68 they started, 1976, four of the teams in the ABA got into the NBA,
right.
Denver, San Antonio, Indiana, and Jersey or New York at the time. The other teams were sold, bought out, whatever. The going rate was plus or minus $3 million. And Donnie says to his clients, the Sillners, let's think outside the box, comes up with a concept where yep. the team, the Sillner brothers, will get a percentage of the media rights that each NBA team gets. At the time, the media rights were like bupkis. They were, you know, nothing. They were like, okay, give it to them. By 2019, the Sillners had collected $250 million. They right. still had the media rights.
And if I'm not mistaken, they eventually were bought out for damn near $1 billion. Is that correct?
What happened was they were bought. There was a settlement.
Yeah.
I believe it was $500 million, and you add that to the $250 and you're up.
So almost
it
might have been just under $1 billion bucks, yeah.
That's where it came from.
Yeah.
I remember... When Donnie Walsh became the head of the Knicks, coming from Indiana, I knew Donnie well, because at the time, Mark Jackson was playing for Indiana.
And Mark was one of your clients, right?
Yes. And I go up to visit him, and we're talking, and this comes up, and Donnie goes, that effing kind, we try to break it, we try to go around it, it's still there. And... this is, you know...
Can you imagine doing a deal in 1976 that becomes an annuity, and as the TV deal and the NBA grows in popularity, these two guys are sitting back not doing a damn thing.
You're just
getting checks.
Yeah.
Years later...
Arguably the greatest business deal in American history.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Years later, Donnie is honored at the Friars Club.
Donnie Walsh.
Donnie Shupak. I'm sorry.
Sorry, go ahead.
Because he had founded the High School for Leadership and Public Service in New York City, which gave scholarships to underprivileged kids. Scholarships to Syracuse if they did well at the high school. And the whole program was a roaring success because the kids who went to Syracuse had, on average, higher grade point than the general population.
Okay.
So that was great. So they're honoring Donnie, and Costas flies in to be the MC because of all that Donnie
sure.
had done. They had 6 speakers. They had Costas the MC. They had 2 kids from the school, 2 administrators from the school, and me. So now I'm up there, and I start telling Shupak stories. Donnie was this wild and crazy guy, smart as a whip. He represented during... school years, Lou Reed and his band.
Really?
Lou was in my dorm at Syracuse. He used to come to my room to listen to my records. I had 745s, all the black stuff. He loved Tina, James, as in Brown. He loved all that's the doo-wop. I had everything.
Yeah.
And we'd talk, and he had a band, L.A. and the Eldorados, for Lewis Allen. And then, of course, he went on to
become a legendary rock star,
the icon. In any case, Donnie's had a puppy, at Syracuse. He lived on the second floor.
It's a great way to meet girls.
Yeah.
And he had a puppy. And you know, Syracuse is really cold in the winter. Oh, I don't have to tell you. This guy knows. So Donnie never wanted to walk the dog. So what he did, he tied a clothesline around the dog's waist. He let the dog out the window of the second story. The dog will run around and piddle and poo, and then he bring it back up. And I'm telling the story at the Friars Club, and everybody's roaring. And now I leave, I go off, and the MC, Costa, comes up, and he looks at me, he goes, quote, "Don Cronson is a tough act to follow."
Yeah, you certainly are. Have you ever considered putting all these stories on paper?
Several people have told me I should write a book.
Yeah.
The answer is, I don't know that. These are good stories for maybe people into sports, people that know me. And I got a lot of them. Some of which, you know, I maybe don't want to tell on the air, but I have some
I'm sure there's more than a handful of those. Oh. Give me a story, if you don't mind. Tony Dan Cronson, one of the great agents, one of the first agents, really, in American sports. Is there a story that you can share where, I don't know, your phone rang at 4 o'clock in the morning?
Yes.
And, there was trouble that you had to help.
It's All-Star weekend in 1998, and the NBA All-Star game is being played here in the city.
Okay.
And Anthony Mason, my client, you know, he's home, which is Queens. And that Friday night, he and a bunch of his guys, his crew, get a couple limos, and they go to Queens College, where he's the honorary coach of a given game. So now it's early Saturday morning. My phone rings, and who is it? It's Susan Waldman, the Susan Waldman, who
She was covering the
Knicks.
Yeah, and the first voice ever heard on WFAN as we sit here.
Right.
Yes.
She says, "Don, did you hear that Anthony was arrested?" Like, what? For having sex with underage girls. I said, "Oh, my God." So now it's Sunday, and...
Yep. Is that you? It's okay. No worries.
All right. And I said, it's the weekend. And by the way, months later, the DNA totally absolved Anthony of anything regarding improper or any sex, because he was upstairs talking to one of his friends while his boys were downstairs, and one of them
got it.
Anyway, but right then, Mason, he did this, he did that. I said, I got to get him out of Queens lockup. This is not a nice place to be. And it's the weekend, and who can find a bail bondsman? I go to one of my buddies who I knew had cash, and I get $20,000 because I wanted to bail Anthony and all his three or four guys out. I put 10 in one pocket of my jacket and 10 in the other, and I go, and that, among other things, I was always there for my guys. I was a small business, as it were. And what I could do that the others couldn't, because he had so many clients, so I could be with my guys who would be there.
You had a personal relationship with the families, the friends.
Absolutely. I knew the moms, the dads.
Yeah.
And, that was very helpful.
But Anthony's actually a dear friend of mine. And after his playing career, when he was trying to figure out what to do next, he got me to buy life insurance from him. And the day I'm signing the contract, we're at Hill Country Barbecue on 26th between 5th and 6th. And I've agreed to buy life insurance now through Anthony Mason. He had a home in New Rochelle, which is where I'm from.
Yes.
And we became very good friends very quickly.
Oh,
and I'm trying to help him out. So I buy a life insurance policy from him. We're signing the contract, and an attractive UPS woman is on, you know where I'm going, is on the block.
I know very well where you're going.
All of a sudden, Anthony goes, "I'll be right back." I'm like, "We're signing the contract. Like, I'm doing you a favor. Signing the contract." He goes, "Just sign it and hang on to it. I'll be back." I go, "When are you coming back?" He goes, "It all depends."
What a character.
He didn't come back.
He did not come back.
I talked to him a few days later.
To say something that most people don't know. He was tough. He was, he willed himself into the NBA. Yes. He was drafted 52nd. He didn't even go to Portland. He went to Europe, and he went with his mom.
Mm.
Anthony Mason was, in the best sense of the term, a mama's boy. He looked after her. First thing, what about mom? What this? What about that? He was also a terrific father. Now, he did father four children from four different people. That he did, but he took care of everybody.
Yep.
And currently, and this is interesting, his son, Armin Mason. Now, I met Armin for the first time when Anthony had the massive heart attack, and I went to visit him in the hospital. And Armin, 11 years old, and his mom, Ramona, were up from Savannah, Georgia, where they were living. And I wound up keeping in touch with both Armin and Ramona to the point that I was invited and attended Armin's high school graduation.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then currently, Armin is at Clemson University. He already has graduated, but still has eligibility. He's on the football team, number 34 in your program, number one in your heart.
That's great.
And his mom, of course, is big. You should see his mom. Talk about gorgeous.
Yeah.
Anthony, what a character. I mean, I used to visit him after he was traded. I remember visiting him in Charlotte. We went to the game, and then we'd come back to his condo, really. And then he'd go on one of his midnight runs. So now,
David doesn't know what those are.
I think I know.
I had my guest bedroom, and I go in the bedroom, and in the bed is a gorgeous young African American lady, and I have a thing about I don't quote unquote party with my clients. I'll go out with them. I'll go to dinner. I'll double date, but I don't get into the other stuff.
Right.
And she's looking at me, and the thing is, the lights are out in the room, but the light is on in the hallway, and peeking around the door with the glint from the light is Anthony with this look. Now he's crawling on the floor to get to the front of the bed, below the mattress level, so he could stick his head up and look. And I said, we can't have this.
Let me ask you a quick, before I let you go, Dan Cranston's here. I could talk to you all day. Maybe we'll have you back another day, because I'd love to hear more of the stories. And I think the audience appreciates them as well. For a guy that's lived the life you've lived and has been affiliated with professional basketball in this country since more or less the start of the NBA, I'm sure this question has dawned on you. Let me first, I'll give you the easy way out first. All-time starting five.
I was thinking about this recently. I saw a list of the top 30 players in NBA history, and Elgin Baylor was not on the list. I mean, there's such a disconnect because of the age difference. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, we had those guys, and now we don't have them anymore. We have these guys. Do you want to make this team based on individual ability, or you're putting a team together?
Okay,
because it's basketball.
Before I answer that question, is Michael Jordan the greatest basketball player of all time?
I would say you have to give it to him, yes, because of his individual accomplishments, points, etc., and the rings.
Okay, is LeBron James one of the 10 greatest Lakers of all time?
Yes.
Really? I thought that'd be an easy no for you.
No, I think he's an all-time. LeBron, does everything, and it'll be very interesting to see him in more or less a facilitator role with the Sixers, as opposed to, I think the guy that's going to benefit from LeBron the most, and this might not be on the floor, is Joel Embiid, because LeBron,
if he's able to stay on the court,
focus on people, and they're going to listen.
Right. All right, so if I made you create a team for me, I know basketball's become a positionless sport.
I would have Russell at center. That's my team.
Russell over Wilt.
Yes, because of team. Individually, obviously, Wilt. He averaged 50 one year. I mean, and he wasn't even the MVP. Russell was. I mean, hello.
Okay, so Russell's your starting center.
Yes.
Who's your power forward?
Got to have Michael on the team, so I put him at one of the guards.
So power Michael's forward, your shooting guard.
You know, power forward, I'm going to have Bird. Shooting forward, let me think. You know what I'll do? I'm going to have Karl Malone at power forward and Larry Bird at
the three
forward.
Okay.
And
Jordan at the two.
One of the back who's one of the guards.
Who's your point guard?
I grew up with Oscar. I loved Oscar, but it's hard not to have Magic because of all that stuff that he brings.
Yeah.
I remember when Oscar came to the Garden, his coming out parties, he got, I think, 56 against Seton Hall in 1956 or 7. He got 50-plus. And it was always Oscar and West back in the day.
Right.
But, you know, we've got, you know, these great, great players now. And they're more athletic. They're in better shape.
Yep.
They're, really, really improved.
Do you have any regrets from a lifetime of representation and being involved in sports and the athletes you repped?
I wish I had gotten so-and-so, but, you know, it's the business.
Yeah.
You know, you win some, you lose some, and some are rained out, as they say. And
what did you think about the Knick championship this year?
OMG. I was at the game where they came back from 29 down.
Right.
Greatest comeback ever. The interesting story is I have a very close friend. His name is Steve Linette. He lives out on the coast. He represents their personalities. Otis Livingston amongst them, even though he lives in L.A. She said, Donald, I'm taking you to this game. I'm coming in from L.A. and I'm paying for everything. He paid $8,500 for my ticket.
That's a good friend.
That's a good friend.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I mean, unbelievable. It reminds me of...
So I got to ask you the question, because Dave and I looked at each other. How badly did you want to leave that game early?
Oh, no. I have a rule. I never, ever leave a game early.
Mm.
It's always, from when I was a kid. In fact, you have to hear this high school story. I played against Bill Parcells in high school. Parcells was a star athlete at Riverdale, New Jersey High School. Regional school, River Edge, New Jersey, or Adel, New Jersey, Riverdale High School. He played football, basketball, baseball. I played soccer, basketball, and baseball. Playing in a county championship. Parcells is pitching. Unfortunately for him, our pitcher was a young man named Arnie Thorsland, who was, in 1959, my junior in high school, his senior, the number one high school pitcher in the country, and just a typical Jersey public school, Teaneck High School. We had 10 scouts at every game. We had 16 scouts at this game. And Arnie, and we beat him 2-0. Years later, when I was an agent, I'm down at the Senior Bowl recruiting players, and of course, Parcells is down there as a coach. I go up, I introduce myself. I said, Bill, played against you, and I remember that. Said, my center fielder misjudged a fly ball. Our catcher, Lenny Gorilli, hit that fly ball off this Fairleigh Dickinson University wall. That's where the two runs came from.
Well, it's a real pleasure to meet you in person. Only because of time constraints, I'm going to end it here. But I think it's great that, at 83 years young, your recall fascinates me. Because you're going back 70 years in some cases, remembering names and moments and dates, I'm fascinated by that.
I went to the NBA All-Star game. It was, I think, the second or third game of all the All-Stars in 1954. My dad said, what do you want for your birthday coming up December 23rd? I said, after next month, January, GM, General Motors, is having the Autorama at one of the hotels, and the NBA has an All-Star game. My father being my father, I had the best parents in the world.
Mm.
And I had a wonderful stepfather. My dad died on the golf course early. My mother remarried 5 years later. My stepfather, Moses L. Cove, was a prosecutor at the Nazi Nuremberg war crime trial.
Wow.
This man was all about 5 foot six, diminutive in height, a giant in the Jewish community, needless to say.
Mm. Did you watch the Nuremberg movie?
I haven't seen it, no. But I'm a World War II historian, a buff, so I listen to a book every night.
You do.
So from, you know, end of World War I all the way through. But I must say, it's been a pleasure. Gentlemen.
Yes.
Wow. I
mean, it's been a treat for us.
I love to talk, you can tell.
I love it, though. I love it. Gave us a break, but I could listen to these stories all day, so let's stay in touch. I'd love to continue this conversation at a later date, because you have so many more stories and gems. And
oh, I have.
I hate that, and pardon me for saying it in this manner, there are too many great stories that die with the people that can tell them.
Yes.
The stories need to be told, especially your generation. Like you talked about being a World War II buff. I started a project a few years ago, which I haven't done in a while, interviewing World War II veterans.
Oh.
Because, you know, we're losing them.
Not many
and
left.
That was a generation that never talked. They didn't come home and share stories of, you know, glory and what the battlefield was like. Many of them died with those stories. And these stories need to be told. Your stories need to be told. So I'm grateful that you were able to come in. And let's do a part two of this sometime in the near future, if you're okay with that.
Oh, I'd love to. I can tell. I love to talk.
And I love to listen. All good. A pleasure meeting you as well.
And you too,
pleasure
gentlemen.
You, sir.
Appreciate your time. We'll take a quick break, and we'll get back at it with you here all the way to 6 o'clock. 888-808-1019. Transform every drive into a homecoming during the Mercedes-Benz Welcome Home Celebration. Whether you're ready for your first Benz or your next one, Mercedes-Benz of Edison, Regatina, Freehold, and Mercedes-Benz of Union have exceptional offers waiting for you, all backed by the legendary Ray Catena customer experience. Visit today and discover why coming home to Mercedes-Benz has never felt so rewarding. But hurry, the Welcome Home celebration ends at the end of the month, August 31st. Visit RayCatenaMercedes.com. Don't hit the brake yet. Don, I have one more question for you, if you don't mind. Turn this mic back on. Only because I just did a read for a car for a Mercedes. Kill the music for a sec. What was the first automobile you owned?
The first automobile I drove was my parents' 1953 Chrysler New Yorker. I took that up to Syracuse.
You had a car at Syracuse?
Yes, you weren't.
In the 50s?
No, 64.
Okay.
And I parked it outside the dorm. I was in Watson my freshman year and in Kimmel.
I lived in Kimmel also.
After that.
Kimmel's
Zip.
It's gone.
I was on the main floor.
Yeah, and I was on the second floor of Kimmel. We lived in the same dorm.
My first car that I owned was a 1968 Pontiac Tempest Le Mans, which I drove across the country when I started graduate school at UCLA. But the real car that I loved.
Your favorite car that you owned.
My 1966 Lincoln Continental Convertible.
Ooh.
20 feet long, 7 miles to the gallon. I drove it in 2009 Yankees victory parade up the Canyon of Heroes.
Why? How'd you get that job?
Somebody at the Yankees knew they had the car. They said, this would be a great car to be in a parade.
Sure.
Which it was. And in the back was Michael Kay and his mother.
Really?
And we drove right up the Canyon of Heroes, and I still have a bag full of the confetti and paper that they were throwing out.
7 miles to the gallon.
And my license plate was still rocking.
Still rocking. Oh, you've got more stories than that. All right, now I know. By the way, was there a nightclub or a bar inside the Kimmel dorm when you were there?
No, not that I remember.
So before I got there in 87. I lived in Kimmel on the second floor.
Okay.
But the generation before me used to tell these stories that there was an on-campus either a comedy club or some kind of club. Right. In the basement of the dorm that you and I both lived in, across the street from Watson.
Right.
There you go. Don Cronson, everybody. More of him coming up in a future show for sure. But right now, Connor's got a quick word.
And we are coming to you live from the Town Fair Tire Studios, powered by Town Fair Tire. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Town Fair Tire is Connecticut's largest name brand discount tire dealer. And with Town Fair Tire, you get the guaranteed lowest prices on all name brand tires. And they honor all manufacturers' rebates. And they even honor competitors' rebates. With more than 120 stores from Connecticut through New England and an inventory of over 600,000 tires, why go anywhere else? Name brands and discount prices, that's Town Fair Tire. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. And the Afternoon Fan Line is sponsored by Verizon Business, helping small businesses make it big.